From WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Tanya Mosley with Fresh Air. Today, what Americans really think about race. Journalist Michelle Norris has spent the last 14 years collecting what she calls an archive of the human experience. She wanted to see how Americans really talk and think about race, so she asked people to share their thoughts in six words. The results were overwhelming.
We're trying to hold a mirror up to America so the citizens of this wonderful country can see themselves and understand the lived experience of race and understand all of the various perspectives that shape the way we live.
Eventually, the project moved online and got more than 500,000 entries from over 100 countries. Norris turned the project into a new book called Our Hidden Conversations. And later, John Powers reviews a biography of acclaimed doctor France Fanon. First News. This is Fresh Air. I'm Tanya Mosley. In 2010, a year into Barack Obama's presidency, people were declaring that we'd made so much progress that we were close to achieving a post-racial society. Award-winning journalist Michelle Norris wanted to know if that was true. She wanted to explore how Americans really talk and think about race. So she came up with this idea she named the Race Card Project and placed postcards in airports and coffee shops that asked a simple question, race, your thoughts, tell me your six words. Norris was sure that most of those who would respond would be people of color, because those are the ones we often hear talk about race. But over the last 14 years, a vast number of the responses, over 500,000, have been from white Americans in the U.S. and the world. People from all walks of life sharing their most honest, intimate, and revealing thoughts about race. Norris has turned the Race Card Project into a new book titled Our Hidden Conversations, What Americans Really Think About Race and Identity. Here's a snippet from the audiobook.
Mom's racism took my love away.
Dad said, date your own race.
My grandfather would hate my children.
My dad's prejudices live in me.
I hear my grandfather's hateful words.
Grandma, you can't say that anymore.
That's an audio snippet from Michelle Norris's new book, Our Hidden Conversations. Michelle Norris is an award-winning journalist and author. She's a columnist for the Washington Post opinion section, the host of the Audible original podcast, Your Mama's Kitchen, and a former co-host of NPR's All Things Considered. Norris won a Peabody Award in 2013 for the Race Card Project, and her first book, a memoir, is titled The Grace of Silence. Michelle Norris, welcome to Fresh Air.
It is so good to be with you.
It is so great to have you, Michelle. You describe this project as an archive of the human experience, and it really is. I just can't say enough how it's both moving and educational and sobering and yet joyful and hopeful. And I was reading things that I know people don't share. I felt like I was actually inside of someone's home. I was listening to a conversation that maybe I had not been privy to before. And there's so much diversity of thought and geographical location and ethnicity and gender in this book. I'm just wondering, why do you think the majority of your responses, though, have been from white people?
You know, I get this question, and I'm just not sure I have the answer.
I thought,
you know, in the beginning, I thought because I work at NPR, and let's be honest, the majority of our listeners are white Americans. I thought, well, maybe that was part of it. But we've been at this for 14 years, and so, you know, I haven't been on the air consistently at NPR for a long time. A lot of people write to us from. And I don't think that they maybe, you know, come from the NPR universe. I think a big part of it was modeling.
Say more. What do you mean?
Well, I think we have this presumption, this assumption that white people aren't invited to the party when it comes to a conversation about race, that there's no room for them in this conversation, that most of our conversations about race are centered on people of color. And usually if we're going to have a conversation about race, there is an expectation that it's going to be by or for or about black people.
Mm-hmm.
And to the extent white people are involved, they're bystanders. They're watching over, you know, over our shoulders, saying this is a person of color. They're not expected to lead the conversation and maybe not even be in the conversation. And when we started, I think the website was key because we were gathering stories, but we were also presenting them. We were making them available so people could come to the website, they could submit their own story, but they could also see, oh, this is what
other
this person
stories.
Is saying. This is, yeah, yeah, this is what they're, oh, these are the rules of engagement. Oh, I have something to say, and it looks like I might actually be able to say it.
Right.
And
so many people shared with you that they feel left out of the conversation.
Yes, yes.
Especially those who identify as white, but then those who identify as Asian or Middle Eastern or Latino, that our conversations are just so binary in the United States. It's so black and white.
And there are a lot of people that we've heard from who feel like they have been sidelined, you know, as well. Even though they're seen as people of color, you know, some people feel like they've been sidelined and they're not people of color, but they're of a cohort that they feel they feel some difference attached to them because they were in the military, because they're Jewish, because they are of a part of a religious minority, you know, of some kind. And they come to the project and they realize, okay, there's this big, diverse symphony of voices, and I can be a part of that.
I want to give some examples of this and the layout of the book. It is unique because it is a compilation of your writing and photographs and postcards and written quotes and first-person stories. And then there is the audiobook. You know, I think those who are into audiobooks, there are hits and misses on that. Sometimes people are just relaying and reading the book, and then other times it's a full production. And this is definitely a full production because you have real people sometimes reading their six words and others going deeper into their stories in their own words. I want to play an example of this from the audiobook. This comes from Michelle Welsh, who lives in Maryland, and she's sharing something that she's grappling with as a parent. Let's listen.
I'm relieved my son looks white. Michelle Welsh, Severna Park, Maryland. I'm biracial, white and Pakistani. I look Pakistani. My husband is white. My son is a big, blonde, fair-skinned, blue-eyed toddler. We live in an affluent, largely white town. I'm grateful he will never be asked his nationality, be the diversity hire, or live with an identity crisis. Is that wrong? To want life to be easier for your children, even if it seems like a step backward?
That was a submission to the Race Card Project from Michelle Welsh in Maryland. Michelle, this woman is asking a pretty profound question that involves her child. Knowing and understanding the realities of life for a person of color and wanting the best for him. And you received quite a few of these from various races and nationalities, people grappling with how their identity is perceived based on their physical appearance. But as you mentioned earlier, also these things being illuminated for them because of the interactions that they're seeing with their children or how they're seeing their children perceived in the world.
There's so many things that I appreciate about that particular six-word story. Her honesty, let's start there. I mean, you know, to put something like that out in the world that she's wrestling with, I appreciate that she asked it in the form of a question. You know, she's grappling with this. She's wrestling with this. One of the many, you know, lessons that this book has provided for me is that, and I guess I should have understood this based on my own experience as a parent, that your notions of race and racism and difference and belonging and identity alter in some way when you create life, and then when you watch that child grow and you watch that child march through life and develop their own identity, and you watch how the world responds to this beloved human being that you are raising. And there are a lot of cards that reflect that. Will my child look American enough? I wish he was a girl. I'm glad my son is white. So I'm overwhelmed by the honesty in these cards, and I think that it belies the original assumption in the creation of the Race Card Project. I created the Race Card Project because I thought no one wanted to talk about race. And yet a woman in suburban Maryland, who probably doesn't have these kinds of conversations at work, maybe doesn't even have them at home, you know, don't know how often she has them in her community, felt emboldened to step up to a space like this and have that conversation, which to me suggests that there was a bigger appetite for this than I originally thought.
You know, there's another through line in this book of white people in particular. We've already talked about, like, the fear of talking about race. But there's also a through line of folks who feel tired of talking about and hearing about race. And I want to play another clip from the audiobook. This one is from Douglas Thomas from Florida. He's talking about his thoughts about being a white man. Let's listen.
White privilege. Enjoy it. Earned it. Douglas Thomas, Florida. I'm not apologizing for something I have no control over. Every major contribution to mankind was done by people of my race. Society owes white people a debt of gratitude, not scorn.
That was an audio excerpt from Michelle Norse's new book, Our Hidden Conversations. Okay, Michelle, this one was really interesting to me because, for one, the honesty, this is how he really feels. Mm-hmm. And if we are truthful, what he's saying is embedded into the fabric of our society. But it also made me wonder how often you received messages where white people in particular felt they were being unfairly made to feel guilty for being white.
Well, you see a number of them in the book, and that's because there are a fair number that are represented in the archive. We should say that particular excerpt that you just heard from the audiobook was not read by Mr. Thomas. That was one of the cases where we had one of the voice actors read that because he chose not. He submitted his card, but he chose not to read his in the book. So I just want to clarify mm-hmm. that. And, and we've received some finger wagging from people who say, why did you include those kinds of stories? Do we really need to hear from people who think like that? And what we're trying to do in this project is understand racial dynamics in America. We're trying to hold a mirror up to America so the citizens of this wonderful country can see themselves and see how, understand the lived experience of race and understand all of the various perspectives that shape the way we live and shape how we interact with each other and wind up shaping policy. A lot of the things that we see in America, we think that it just happened in some sort of anaerobic way, that this boardroom looks the way it does because it just sort of happened, or this neighborhood has this kind of racial composition because it just kind of happened. It often happens because of policies. It often happens because of decisions. It often happens because of attitudes that people have, assumptions people have. And so it is worthwhile understanding the root cause of some of this, the actuality of some of this. And so I decided that in order to really present the fullest possible picture of what race and identity look like in America, what the voice of this issue would sound like, I had to hear from as many people as possible. And I had to make sure that when people looked in that proverbial mirror, that they saw the full picture.
Were there some that you grappled with that you thought, should we show the world how people really feel if you're giving a true sense of the discourse in the United States and abroad?
We do grapple with it. And when I say we have a small but mighty team. I've worked with Melissa Bear since the very beginning, and we have a few other people that we have been working with. And we do talk about it. And I have sought counsel from, other people and sought advice in some cases. But if it is, we're careful about language, although the N-word, does, because it's sadly still used. There are other words that would be considered slurs that you'll find in the pages of the book, and there's, a little bit of an advisory about that. But again, it's that mirror, and especially in a moment right now where we are very divided as a country and where people are invested in our divisions and they are finding a willing audience for that. To pretend that does not exist while you are examining the issues of race and identity in America would undermine the integrity of the project. So we don't include everything. If it is absolutely, the difference between scornful and hateful is different. There is a difference between scornful and hateful.
Sure.
There is a difference between umbrage and outright threats.
If you're just joining us, my guest is award-winning journalist and author Michelle Norris. She has a new book, Our Hidden Conversations, What Americans Really Think About Race and Identity. We'll continue our conversation after a short break. This is Fresh Air. This is Fresh Air, and today we're talking to Michelle Norris about her new book, Our Hidden Conversations, What Americans Really Think About Race and Identity. Michelle Norris is a columnist for The Washington Post and host of the Audible original podcast, Your Mama's Kitchen. From 2002 to 2012, she was the co-host for NPR's All Things Considered. Her first book is a memoir titled The Grace of Silence. I want to talk a little bit about lineage because you devote a whole chapter to it. What's kept secret? What's passed down? Essentially how previous generations dealt with race and racism when the social order was so rigid. And I want to play a clip from Sarah Nielsen in Austin, Texas, that sort of gets at this. Let's listen.
The birth certificate read Gerald Marks. Sarah Nielsen, Austin, Texas. My grandfather passed away, and his birth certificate read Gerald Marks. We only ever knew him as Gerald Nielsen. Did my grandmother know? Who was Gerald Marks, and where was his family from? Are we Jewish? Was the story of his abandonment, adoption, true? Or was he the Gerald Mars of record, listed as an orphan in Brooklyn the month he was born? Where is his half-sister, Beatrix Beverly? Where is my family? Who was my beloved grandfather? What is my home?
That was an audio excerpt from Michelle Norris's new book, Our Hidden Conversations. And Michelle, there's so much in that that audio clip, so much history there, so much story within the story. Mm-hmm. But this woman found a birth certificate. And those last words really hit me because I think you mentioned this. Lots of people are grappling with lineage. People in the last decade, especially with these DNA ancestry tests, are really grappling with their own ideas of who they are and how they perceive others. Was that something that you had expected as you moved through this project?
I didn't even know what to expect when I did this, when I first put the basket on the table and said, you know, race your thoughts, six words, please send. That is definitely one of the tendrils that we've seen in these stories, the way that people reinvent themselves and don't necessarily let people know. And that resonated with me because, you know, my first book was about things that I discovered in my family that, you know, no one had talked about, that
which we're going to talk about. Yeah.
You know, were there, you know, secrets and the way people put things in a top drawer, you know, and then slam it shut and never think about that again. DNA, there are several stories in the book that reference DNA, people making discoveries because of DNA, people making discoveries about who they are or who someone in their family is, thinking they're one thing, realizing they're something else. Finding a birth certificate, there's, you know, the story of Arlene Lee, who's at the beginning of the book, who is a woman who lives in the Eastern Shore in Maryland, and her mother was white and Peruvian. And she discovers that, you know, her mom told her that her dad was absent, and she discovers her dad was not absent. He was a black man in Peru, and that changes Arlene's, you know, sense of self. She's thinking, oh, does that mean I'm black? Okay, if I'm black, what else does that mean? And I've been having a 14-year conversation with her, you know, at first during the presidency of Barack Obama, and then later during the presidency of Donald Trump, and then later after the rotting of the Capitol and the presidency of Joe Biden. And her, you know, thoughts on this has been interesting all along. But America is a place filled with people who often came from someplace else. And in the quest to become more American, in the quest to find acceptance, in the quest to find stability, sometimes they shaved a few things off their resume or their heritage. They sort of shape-shifted a little bit. And these are, you know, some of the stories from people who they're trying to figure it out. You asked what I expected. I never expected I would get so many stories about passing, because I thought passing was passé. I didn't think that
passing was of another time.
Yes, exactly.
And so you received stories of people who are passing in current day.
Yes, or people who were raised by people who they discovered were passing, or people who are trying to figure out if they want to continue passing. I mean, there are several stories about passing, and as a person of color, as a black woman, I, you know, we've read books about passing. We've, you know, seen Imitation of Life. We've had conversations in our families about this. I kind of thought that passing was something that applied, frankly, to black people because that was my experience. When we talked about passing, we were usually talking about someone who had passed over into whiteness.
Yeah.
Or passed over maybe into being swarthy of some other kind. Swarthy, a word that, you know, people often used. Not the word I would necessarily reach for, but that was often, you know, to describe someone who was,
sure,
you know, could be Greek, could be Italian, could be Puerto Rican.
Right.
The stories of passing that have passed through the inbox come from all kinds of places. People mm-hmm. who decide not to be Jewish, people who decide not to be Italian, people who decide not to be a different kind of Latino because it just happens to be more acceptable where they happen to be mm-hmm. in their business mm-hmm. community. It's just easier to do business as someone who is of Mexican descent than of Guatemalan descent because that's just the reality where they happen to live.
Our guest today is Michelle Norris. We're talking about her new book, Our Hidden Conversations, What Americans Really Think About Race and Identity. I'm Tanya Mosley, and this is Fresh Air.
The Neubauer Family Foundation supports WHYY's Fresh Air and its commitment to sharing ideas and encouraging meaningful conversation. Support for NPR comes from the station and from BritBox, with the goal of helping people discover a world of British TV, including new original series Archie, The Man Who Became Cary Grant, streaming at BritBox.com/NPR. And from Dignity Memorial, helping families protect their loved ones and gain peace of mind by planning cremations and funerals in advance. Dedicated to professionalism and compassion in every detail. More at dignitymemorial.com.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Tanya Mosley, and today we're talking to award-winning journalist and author Michelle Norris about her new book, Our Hidden Conversations, What Americans Really Think About Race and Identity. Michelle is a columnist for The Washington Post and the host of the Audible original podcast, Your Mama's Kitchen. From 2002 to 2012, she was a co-host for NPR's All Things Considered. Before joining NPR, Norris spent almost 10 years as a reporter for ABC News, covering politics, policy, and the dynamics of social change. And early in her career, she also worked as a staff writer for The Washington Post, Chicago Tribune, and The Los Angeles Times. Her first book is a memoir titled The Grace of Silence. You set out to write this book. You wanted to do it for such a long time. But then you started listening closely to your own family conversations, and you learned some secrets that they had purposely shielded from you, specifically an incident with your father mm-hmm. and your grandmother's profession. Your grandmother was a traveling Aunt Jemima. She would do pancake mix demonstrations, and you didn't learn about this until much later in your life.
Well, this is my second attempt to write a book about race. The first time I was planning to, you know, Barack Obama had just been elected, and I was going to go out into the world and listen to people talk honestly about race, because we were talking about America becoming post-racial, and I thought, I think something more interesting is happening out here. I think this is going to be a rather complex chapter in American life regarding race and identity. And so that was my intent. But then when I started to hear stories in my own family, I realized I wanted to write a different book because I had discovered secrets from both of my parents, my mother and my father. My mother's mother, yes, worked as a traveling Aunt Jemima when convenience cooking was relatively new and pancake mix was something novel. She was traveling the country doing cooking demonstrations at county fairs and Rotarian breakfasts and things like this to try to convince people to buy Aunt Jemima pancake mix. And when she did this work, she had to dress up like Aunt Jemima, hoop skirt, headscarf. And she was supposed to speak in this sort of slave lingo. They gave her scripts, I discovered. I did a lot of research on these. There's a whole army of these traveling Aunt Jemimas that worked across the country. And they turned out they were paid, you know, pretty well to do this work. But my family never talked about it. And when I did research, I discovered, I found newspaper clippings of when she was going into these small towns, found a recording of where she, you know, actually
was
interviewed.
How did you find out about it? Did someone just mention it to you and then you went on to research it?
So in both of these cases, when I learned about my father's incident in Birmingham, Alabama, and my grandma Ione's work as an itinerant Aunt Jemima, in both cases, it was aging uncles. It was my Uncle Jimmy on my mom's side, my Uncle Joe on my dad's side. And just, you know, as people get older, they enter a space of disinhibition. They just, you know, say what's on their mind. And my Uncle Jimmy had started talking about this in part because he wanted to know more about it. He was doing some research on her and started to talk about it. My mother and other family members, you know, it's a complicated thing when Aunt Jemima is a member of your family.
Mm-hmm.
And she was doing this work in the late 40s and the early 50s, and her work as an Aunt Jemima was starting to rub up against